As I said earlier, we're entering into a season called Lent. Lent is this time of preparation, a series of Sundays that leads us up to Easter. So during these Sundays leading up to Easter, we're going to spend time studying what are sometimes referred to as the seven last words of Christ. These seven words, seven phrases, seven things that he said from the cross. I don't like to refer to them necessarily as his last words because they weren't the last words that he spoke, because Jesus did come back from the dead. But I think there is some significance in these. That these are the words that Jesus spoke while he was being crucified. These are the words that he spoke that help us understand Jesus and his mission. These are the words that take place while he is fulfilling that mission. In some sense, it helps us understand what matters to God. In these words, we see the heart of God. We hear these words, and these are the seven phrases, or seven words. Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they do. Truly, I say to you, today you will be with me in paradise. Woman, behold your son. Son, behold your mother. My God, why have you forsaken me? I thirst. Father, into thy hands I commend my spirit. And the gift is finished. So we'll be looking at each one of those each week. Today we begin with the words, Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing. We heard today from the 23rd chapter of Luke. So let's set the scene. Jesus has had a meal with his followers. He's been betrayed and been arrested. There's been this back and forth where he's been brought before Pontius Pilate, the Roman governor, then over to Herod, and then back to Pontius Pilate. And there's a tug of war, and the people and the religious leaders are calling for Jesus to be crucified. But Pilate's seeking to find some innocence, and Pilate keeps looking at them and saying, but this man has done nothing. But the crowd insists, the crowd persists. And eventually, Pilate hands them over. He's beaten, mocked, and then led out of the city. And imagine Jesus now is being marched out of the city of Jerusalem, the city in which God said he would place his name. And Jesus is being led out of this city to a small place called Golgotha, the hill of the skull, and probably called that because it, from a certain direction, appeared to look like a skull. There's a songwriter named Audrey Assad. She wrote this song, and a song is called Evergreen, but a phrase in it says, God on a cross, who would have thought it? This place looks nothing like Eden. God on a cross, who would have thought it? This place looks nothing like Eden. We think of back to the beginning of the Bible, the Garden of Eden. And there we find in that garden, God walking with people. Now we come to this day when Jesus is being crucified. We find now people walking God to a place to die. And so we come to these words and we come to the cross, and the cross was a place of shame, a place of agony and pain. And what I was noticing as I was reading again was that sometimes we talk a lot about how painful and how miserable and how awful it was to die by crucifixion. And there's no doubt about that. But I also notice the writers don't make much of that. The gospel writers really don't talk a lot about how painful it was or how awful it was. Maybe they just assumed it. Or maybe that's not the focus. But we need to realize that what Jesus was going through was a painful thing. It was an agonizing thing. It was also an incredibly shameful thing. Crucifixions, executions, as we do them now, are often in closed rooms, behind curtains with only family. Executions, such as crucifixions, were used as a public display. They were done right outside the city. And so sometimes we envision this large hill with a cross way up on top. It was probably a small little hill right by the road. Why right by the road? So everyone could see it. So as everyone walked by, they would see what would happen to those who opposed and opposed Rome. And we see Jesus suffering. We see him suffering in injustice because as Pilate had recognized, even as Herod recognized, Jesus had done nothing wrong. And so how does he respond to injustice? He responds with those words, Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing. Now, if we read the rest of the Bible, that's not necessarily what we expect Jesus to say. In the Old Testament, we see people responding to wrong being done with a call for vengeance. Maybe not vengeance of your own, but asking God for retribution. So you read the Psalms and you hear these stories. When people suffer injustice, you want God to do something about it. You want God to strike back. But we get that. I get that. I mean, how many of us, when something goes wrong, when something bad happens to us, we want justice. We want things made right. We want things fixed. Even if somebody just steals our parking lot place, right? We went and said, wow, I can't believe that. And we get a flat tire. Whatever it is, I mean, there's something, we see things, or somebody speeds by us, and we hope the police pull them over, right? And so there's this sense of feeling like when something hurts us, and now I think at deeper levels, when someone has hurt you. And then someone has said something mean to you, when someone has done something hurtful, when someone has stolen something from you, when someone has mocked you, or shamed you, and there's something wells up inside of you, and you want to respond. You want to respond, or you think, well, but I can't respond. I'm a Christian. So God, would you just take care of it for me? Would you give them just... But that's not what Jesus does. Jesus transcends all this and asks forgiveness for those who are crucified. So I want us to think about these words that he says. Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing. He begins simply with Father. Father, it's a reference point, a compassionate Father who longs to forgive. Jesus can trust him because this is the Father's heart. Now, here's Jesus being executed. And again, speaking of executions in these days, oftentimes if you ever watched or witnessed or maybe in a movie seen executions, the person being executed, what, often asks for forgiveness from the people they wronged. But here he is praying forgiveness for others. So he uses the word Father. There's this closeness to God, a union, a unity with God, that even in the midst of the agony, even in the midst of the pain, even in the midst of the shame, Jesus is affirming God's goodness. That all these injustices are going on, all these things that are going wrong, but Jesus has absolute confidence in God's presence and God's goodness. So Jesus, who is one with the Father, in some sense, as we see this conversation happening, we talk about God, the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, that there's a oneness to them. We see in some sense, in this conversation where God, where Jesus is speaking to the Father, saying, Father, forgive them. We see the heart of God. We see this interior conversation that's going on. These words of the interior are made visible. And so Jesus, in simply that word, Father, tells us an immense amount of things. But then he says, forgive them. How many of us think forgiveness is easy? We've ever tried it. It's a difficult thing. Now, here is Jesus, though. It's one thing to sit in church and talk about it. Say, oh, yeah, I know what Jesus said. Forgive my enemies. But then to go and to do it. And here's Jesus doing it from the cross. So who's the them? Father, forgive them. It's the people who stand around. The people around around the cross. There's the people who stood watching. Christ has entered this city, and there's this crowd that's standing around and watching. There's something fascinating about crowds. How you can have a group of people and how they can become a crowd. And I was listening to one pastor, and he was talking about this way that people try to engage, and it becomes a crowd, and becomes a, when they kind of sense this common purpose. And so this pastor talked about it. He said, have you ever been to a concert or something, and the person gets up, and so if you go to Unity Festival, and the singer gets up on stage, one day you're like, how's everybody doing out there? Come on! Hello, Michigan! Or hello, Muskegon! What are they doing? They're trying to get you all... Because at this point, you're just a bunch of individuals. But at this point now, it becomes a crowd. It becomes this group of people. And so in some sense, that's what's happened. Earlier in the story, we've heard this group of people that they came from all different walks of life, all different things. But then at some point, someone starts to shout, crucify. And then the words come, and then they become a crowd. They become one, and there becomes this unity to who they are. So who are the people around Jesus? Who are these people? He's saying, Father, forgive them. One, it's a crowd. It's the people who stand watching. There's the religious leaders, the rulers, who have aligned themselves with the Romans. And they're looking, these religious leaders are looking at Jesus, and they're seeing him as the one who is now cursed. Because in Jewish tradition, to be tree was being cursed. And so they see him as being cursed, but don't recognize him as being cursed for their sake. Who else is around Jesus at this point as he says, "Father, forgive them"? They're the Roman soldiers. The soldiers who, in some sense, this is just what they do. Each and every day, they probably, some of these men who standing by the cross there, have probably crucified dozens of individuals, maybe hundreds. And it's just another one, another day in the life of being a Roman soldier. Another day of showing the might and the power of Rome. Because that's what a crucifixion was. It was a way to say, if you stand against the power of Rome, this is what will happen to you. And so here are these men, these soldiers, trained to kill. And they're used to crushing and solving things through power. They see Jesus there. They see no threat. They see nothing there. In fact, what they see is a failure. They see someone who's a failure. And so here's the soldiers. And then there are the watchers and the mockers. The curious who want to see the outcome of their demand. And then there's the ones who mock and mock his inability to save. And so Jesus looks, and when he says, "Father, forgive them," he sees this crowd of all these different kinds of people, all who come from these different places. "Father, forgive them. They do not know what they are doing." And this was the one phrase that I struggled with, trying to figure out what it means. And even as I read a number of commentaries, most of them just kind of skip that phrase over. Don't give a whole lot of information. But what I think is going on is, I mean, they know they're killing an innocent man. And it's like, you know, the whole idea of like, well, they didn't know that. They know they're killing. Do they know it's the Son of God? No. But I think the focus is on there's this blindness, this hardness of heart that Jesus talks about, like people not knowing what they're doing, that they get so caught up in doing their own things, they don't realize what's actually going on. And so Jesus is praying for their eyes to be open. And in some sense, each of those prayers, "Father, forgive them," is a prayer for us. Because we can all find ourselves in one of those positions, or maybe in all of those positions at some time. Sometimes we're part of the crowd. Sometimes we're a mocker. Sometimes we're just a casual observer. Sometimes we're the soldiers just going about our job. Sometimes we're questing for power. Sometimes we're the religious leader and seeing others. Sometimes we just don't know what we're doing. We've gotten so caught up in the things that we're doing, our way of living, that we become blind to it. But to each one of those, Jesus says, "Father, forgive them." In these words, we see the heart of God and the kindness of the cross. In other words, Jesus is saying, none of you are too far. No one is beyond redemption. We hear that even in my ignorance, God has my best in mind. This is where God reveals his goodness to him, that Jesus could have called down legions of angels. Could have done so many things. But he looks and he says, this is what is at the heart of God. This is what God is to say, forgive. And so he does exactly that. And we need forgiveness. Since we began with the time of confession, we realize that we miss the mark. We fall short. We sin each and every day in the way the things we say, the things we think, the things we do. That God has put us here to do justice and love mercy. God has called us to love him with our whole heart, soul, strength, and mind, and to love our neighbors as ourselves. And we are in desperate need of forgiveness. And Jesus is the answer to that prayer. The death of Jesus makes the prayer a reality. Jesus is able to forgive, and he builds the church. We recognize that if we turn to Jesus, we will be forgiven. In some sense, that's the heart of Christianity. The heart of our faith is to recognize we fall short, but God forgives, and he forgives in Jesus dying on a cross. And so even as Jesus is saying, even as Jesus is praying, "Father, forgive them," he is living out now through his actions. He is enabling that process by which God forgives. But not only that, Jesus is living out his own words. We read earlier in the Gospels, we hear Jesus say, "Love your enemies. And pray for those who persecute you." And Jesus is here not thinking of himself, but of others. So as we think about the goal of the Christian life is to be like Jesus, to be more like Jesus, to be shaped like him. And so it's not to just be forgiven, but then to extend that forgiveness to others. Because in some sense, that's the easy part. The easy part is to receive forgiveness for ourselves. It's easy, maybe easier to pray for our own forgiveness than it is to pray for the forgiveness of others. It's painful. It's costly. And it's not something we do on our own, but only through the power of Jesus. So there's two sides of the cross. One is receiving our own forgiveness, but then the other is to live the life of Jesus and to model that forgiveness for others. And to forgive others. So about 5 years, almost 5 years ago to the day, on February 15th of 2015, some of you may remember this, the Islamic State, also known as ISIS, took 21 Coptic Christians. So these were Coptic, simply refers to Egyptian, Coptic Orthodox Christians, out onto a beach in Libya in orange jumpsuits and executed them. And filmed it all on video. And that video was seen around the world, the execution of these 21 migrant workers. And in response to that, Archbishop Angelos, who's the bishop of the Coptic Christian Church, simply posted a thing on Twitter. He said, "Video released by IS beheading Coptic Christians in Libya. Prayers for them, their families, and all still captive." Then he put hashtag Father Forgive. So for those of you not familiar with it, a hashtag is the little pound sign on your thing. Found that a hashtag was a way to kind of identify something. So he said hashtag Father Forgive. And that attracted the attentions of hundreds and thousands of people. People wanted to know how someone could think like that. How someone could possibly begin to talk about forgiveness in the face of this. The brutality, the wantonness, the brazenness of this group of ISIS who takes these Christians, parades them out into a beach in the orange jumpsuits, and executes them merely because of their religion. And then has the audacity to film it and post this video and show their strength. And they wanted to understand, and so Archbishop Angelos was interviewed on CNN. And he said this, "We don't forgive the act, because the act is heinous. But we do forgive the killers from the depths of our hearts. Otherwise, we would be consumed by anger and hatred. It becomes a spiral of violence that has no place in this world." And so Archbishop Angelos had recognized deep inside him, one, the forgiveness he had received from Jesus, and this pattern that Jesus had set, that when we refuse to forgive others, there's this cycle that continues. And Jesus breaks the cycle of violence. Jesus breaks the cycle of retribution. Jesus breaks all that with those words when he says, "Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing." He offers forgiveness to us, but then in turn, he also teaches us and shows us and models and empowers us to say, this is how we are to treat others. This is the way we are to live. This is the heart of God. This is what it looks like, is to forgive your enemies. To forgive the mockers, to forgive the crowd, to forgive the soldiers, to forgive the religious leaders, to forgive all those around who are killing you, who are crucifying you. And Jesus is saying, this is what I taught, and this is what it looks like. Now he invites us to do the same. To live that same life of forgiveness. Another writer said this, which I found a powerful quote. He said, "God is great in Sinai. The thunders precede him, the lightnings attend him, the earth trembles, the mountains fall in fragments. But there is a greater God than this. On Calvary, nailed to a cross, wounded, thirsty, dying, he cries, 'Father, forgive them. They know not what they do.' Great is the religion of power, but greater is the religion of love. Great is the religion of implacable justice, but greater is the religion of pardoning mercy. Great is the religion of power, but greater is the religion of love. Great is the religion of implacable justice, but greater is the religion of pardoning mercy." That's what we come and celebrate. We don't come and celebrate a God who comes and crushes his enemies. We celebrate a God who comes and brings forgiveness and mercy. And so as we prepare to celebrate communion together, as we prepare to remember Jesus' death for us, for those who are in desperate need of that mercy, who are seeking forgiveness and are wondering, can God possibly forgive what I've done? Know that in Christ you are forgiven. And so as you come and as you receive the bread and the cup, as it's passed out, receive the forgiveness of God for all that you've done. Hear those words spoken to you, Father, forgive. Or maybe you're in that place where you're struggling, where you've been hurt, where you've been wounded. Maybe this week, maybe last year, maybe 20 years ago. And there's still a pain deep inside, and you're struggling, and you want to forgive, but you're not sure how. You don't have the strength. And I'll say this, no, you don't have the strength. But Jesus does. And so as you receive communion, as you receive the bread and the cup, take it and receive Christ into you and receive his strength. Receive his grace. Receive his love. So that in turn, you may then extend that forgiveness to others. If you're in need of forgiveness, Jesus offers it. If you're in need of being able to forgive others, Jesus offers that too. So we come to the table to receive strength and mercy, both from Jesus.